to an attempted suicide at Sunnybrook Hospital. This fella, a friend of mine, tried to commit suicide in 62 and is still trying in 1967. What can I do for you, my friend? Will you try again soon? Is the goddamn world that desolate? Throwing away cigarette butts picked up by bums and people's lives nobody picks up. This robbery of all you thought valuable, committed in private, committed by a woman. Isn't it maybe possible that such a theft allows unnoticed things of no value, invisible for the first time, to gleam gold in a chill sun? This curious creature, behind bars in a military zoo, watched closely by attendants as the pendulum swings back and forth between here and death, euphoria and black depression, alternating bouts with Jacob's angel. The eyes of visiting spectators swivel left and right for tennis. The who wins arouses much disinterest, and someone says, "Hell, I'm interested." "You can't prove it, can you, mister?" "You self-pitying slob, you stupid bastard, I can talk rings around and leave uncircled the silence of things." Who thought he was so irresistible, women melted under his loins after the word's boom was always previously and primarily still there. Oh, yes, you roaring at the bourgeois, or just ranting silly, and so beautifully. I can love a man with such a splendid weakness for a woman, crying jag for the world's hurt people, and if I talk too fast, blinded by arrogance, angry at all unchangeable things that happen, myself grown tired of the long humiliation of living, will you please continue to stand there for a while, with that dumb look of the world's enduring losers, those continual spendthrifts of their mortal selves. Stand somewhere in imagination's distance from your foolish dreams, and halfway back to here from there, sustain me with your presence, my friend. Death of John F. Kennedy. On first hearing of his death, no one believed it, not for a moment. For 3 years, television and newspapers had made him a god of our time. Gods are indestructible. But he was only a man. The man has quietly removed himself, leaving behind the uninhabited legend of himself, which is a little like an empty suit of armor made by a Bronx tailor, or maybe Richard Coeur d'Alene. He, Kennedy, was one of the famous for whom poems get written, like Dylan Thomas, Roosevelt, Nikolai Lenin, only during their dying lifetime, of course. And of those three, only Thomas had the endearing fictional qualities of being real most of the time, 24 hours later than the second-hand reported outrageous events of his life. And I mourn for Catlin, who in jig time, undeniably become... He, Kennedy, was one of the famous for whom poems get written, like Dylan Thomas, Roosevelt, Nikolai Lenin. No? Death of John F. Kennedy. On first hearing of his death, no one believed it, not for a moment. For 3 years, television and newspapers had made him a god of our time. Gods are indestructible. But he was only a man. The man has quietly removed himself, leaving behind the uninhabited legend of himself, which is a little like an empty suit of armor made by a Bronx tailor, or maybe Richard Coeur d'Alene. He, Kennedy, was one of the famous for whom poems get written, like Dylan Thomas, Roosevelt, Nikolai Lenin, only during their dying lifetime, of course. And of those three, only Thomas had the endearing fictional qualities of being real, most of the time 24 hours later than the second-hand reported outrageous events of his life. And I mourn for Catlin, who in jig time undeniably becomes fiction as a ghost-like sound. And come to think of it, I mourn Lee Oswald as well as Kennedy, who was a normal sort of social do-gooder god, whereas Oswald is prototype of the deranged assassin. He murdered Caesar and Lincoln, Archduke Ferdinand and all those titles, even attempted Hitler, and just the other day downtown in a pool room made a pass at me. Yes, I mourn Lee Oswald, because he was a kind of typhoid Mary, who had the disease in its pure form. One disease we all have, animal hate. that seemed so handcuffed to human vitality, so linked and hogtied to the best things. If Oswald had lived, perhaps we could have isolated it in a test tube labeled Oswald extract, or very dangerous and much too human, part of the obscure pride and shame of being Homo sapiens, and might be used to cross the galaxies. Is that why I'm only Oswald? Because he was much too human, and as a result, was never alive? Typhoid Mary with a high-powered mail-order rifle, infecting future colonies across the nebulae with hate. Hey, if only I'd killed Oswald in the pool room downtown when I had my chance. See what I mean? And thinking how the mind empties of passion and speculation, how the population of Earth is replaced every 100 years. The Caesars and street cleaners and fathers and mothers and painfully awkward adolescents with pimples without furor. And no one escapes in the outcry. Only pyramids and some broken bits of pottery survive the long howl of a funeral oration. And out in the suburbs all the time, a mother of six is quietly having another baby. And I mourn Kennedy, the man everybody knows. Strangers who never met, connected by a dead man's compass points, and vectors penetrating now like battery terminals, for which the power supply jams under a heavy load of messages from huntsmen falling asleep standing in snowstorms in the second ice age forever, and Sumerian shepherd kings catching cold and dead of the sniffles, and messages from rock cairns in Transylvania, and exiles in a Roman province from Hyannisport and Sierra Maestra and Crimea and silence. For which the power supply is an inflection of a subordinate clause on television, a remembered grin. Potter. Scott's Irish and wearing a leather apron with a lame foot he got in the war. Works for the tourist trade from 9 to 5, seldom longer, except for special orders, of course. Paints maple leaves under the glaze, beaver and hockey players, maybe. If the price is right, your very own face on a beer mug. Or John McDonald may be had for an honest dollar. Is the potter a soul? For that, come back in another century. Still, it's quite possible. One with some harmless dust on it, for which no one's made an offer yet. If they had, he might not sell, or hold out for a better offer, since Faust brought the price down somewhat. Still, no one's made him an offer, not in this century. Come back again when it isn't raining. What's there to see now with the kids in the car and wife complaining about getting back to Toronto before closing time at the stores? And maybe he doesn't want to go and just stands there thinking about, well, it doesn't matter much in all these miles of watery weather, certainly not Toronto, or anywhere exactly, not in this century. A saucer-eyed Sumerian, patting pottery buttocks as if there was a young girl's body in the wet clay under, deep under, those laughing, long-dead, 5,000-year-old hands. An apprentice from Kangxi province, lying down to sleep in kiln dust, with a few snowflakes falling, thinking, not of Shang Shen sailing a log down the Milky Way, or himself plunging into the fire to make a red bowl for some emperor, being only an apprentice, homesick for the wet green of Kangxi province, lying down to sleep in the hot dust. Again on the highway to Toronto or somewhere in this century, or another one sometime with hot dogs and ice cream for sale by the roadside and cars shoot by. I think that was Pickering in the rain and kids asleep in the back seat. Mother love eternal in the front seat, and she'll make it in time. She's bound to make it in time before the stores close. At closing time in Toronto. When the lights go out in Toronto, this century or another one. Country snowplow. Tyrannosaurus comes lumbering around the stall quaternary glaciers to deliver his ancient thundering manifesto, modified to suit the times. Tyrannosaurus roaming the bedclothes of earth. Warm in the cold hutch, rabbits endure their scarcities. Owls survive a dream of pterodactyls. Snow, engendering in marsupial darkness the fierce equations of light. To rescue the perishing, married woman expecting strength from snow shovel husband. he knowing and searching the shapes of self, to seize the disparate ghost that strength is, baby about to be born, or old man dying without help in diesel thunder, the transistors and sick woman's bones dance, neuter together. Others, with all the resources of not needing, the white dust being merely white dust, hold steadfast in the pouring mill race of cold, marshal around them magazines, collections of postage stamps, and all the old absorbing hobbies of getting and keeping and counting, barricade themselves in themselves and wait, indignant at the lateness of the hour. Thunder dies, and in the monster's milky wake come separate and severally the chattering mammals. Observer. The sun stripes half the winter trees with lengthways light, leaving the other half shadowed. I notice suddenly the sun, the trees, and I are a triangle, of which I can actually see very little. A sparrow abandons flight for a perch in high branches, making the silver isosceles tip a shuddering omphalos for bird watchers. I curse myself for this madman's frenzy that wants to make pretty patterns cut from life. Tomorrow I'll get roaring drunk and tell tremendous lies to myself for an hour, and wistfully yearn for the sober truth of these polygonal, dichotomous, rectangular, hexametric trees and myself for an hour. Double talk. Though we lie as lovers, your body shaking against my lips, your hair wet, Nova bursting at the bedroom window, typewriter downstairs pecking polka dots in eternity, our bodies covered with sweat, our minds with perspiration of beautiful thoughts, the wine we drink nevertheless tastes bad. Our bodies fly at each other, glance off, become all of a million volt faces of light, or 40 watts peeking in under the bedroom door, more or less, your hair wet, as love does to one, or two as the case may be. Nevertheless, the typewriter downstairs cudgels away on one edge of an incident, the outer edge of a vague gentleness, then protrudes on this side of love's patient savagery and stops. But outside, the stars are fucking the universe, and the visiting nova sneak off hysterically to the lesser Magellanic cluster there to consult a good gynecologist. And don't touch me for a minute. You're shaking. I can't help it. But why? Leave me alone. Have a cigarette, if it comes to that. How do the words go? What words? The ones about the beginning or the end and the poignancy of a fragment imagined as entirety. But you said, I know that. I know it too. This poem, then. Homo canadensis. I didn't know him, but thought somebody else did. For everyone was friendly in that bar, except this guy in the red check shirt. He was aggressive and pro-Canadian, stubbing a player's outside the ashtray, swaying in his chair and gulping beer like water, drunk and getting drunker. Best beer in the world, he said. About the only thing left that's really Canadian. And glared at us. Did you know 60% of American industry is American? Oops. Homo canadensis. I didn't know him, but thought somebody else did. For everyone was friendly in that bar, except this guy in the red check shirt. He was aggressive and pro-Canadian, stubbing a player's outside the ashtray, swaying in his chair and gulping beer like water, drunk and getting drunker. Best beer in the world, he said. About the only thing left that's really Canadian. And glared at us. Did you know 60% of Canadian industry is American-owned? They call them American shubshidgeries. Everyone laughed when he stumbled over the word, and he slapped his hand hard on the table. Don't laugh, he said. Okay, I've been drinking. I like to drink. Don't laugh when you see this country taken over, just sort of casually, like an afterthought, like a burp after dinner. So what, somebody said. Everybody here knows we'll belong to the United States in another 10 years. The guy swelled up like a sneering bullfrog. Guys like you deserve to be taken over. When you are, you'll be second-class Americans, like Negroes in the South, like Indians here. You'll be second-class Americans because you were never first-class Canadians in the first place. Everybody stiffened. Okay, he said, I'll buy the beer and shut up. But after a few seconds, he couldn't keep quiet. Anybody ever hear of the San Juan Islands? No, I guess not. Well, Canada got gypped there. Anybody know about the Alaska Panhandle deal? Or remember the Herbert Norman case, by any chance? Well, I'm telling you, this country is being taken like a glass of beer. It's a matter of economics. None of you guys really give a damn. Just slap your beer and wait to be taken by some big-bellied American in Washington. And I'm telling you, they're all greedy bastards. I like Americans, someone said mildly. And it seemed just by chance his arm lifted, meeting check shirt's arm in the middle of the table. It was all it needed. Okay, loudmouth, let's see you put me down. You call it arm wrestling some places. And the yellow beard jiggled as clasped hands pushed an elbow fulcrum, everyone watching. The guy in the check shirt was drunk, and the other guy more or less sober, so it shouldn't have been much of a contest. Their arms strained like two-thirds of a tripod, and check shirt put on the pressure. I'm telling you, they're bastards. The other guy was big, but he collapsed quick, knocking over a glass of beer in the salt shaker. Just shows you, check shirt said, looking around the table. He started to go. I gotta be getting back. Be seeing you. You been hunting, someone asked. That's right, up near Bancroft. Taking back a nice buck. Where are you from? Check shirt grinned. New York, he said. This is an earlier poem about making wild grape wine, which has been succeeded by a much better poem. However, I'll read it anyway. Winemaker's Song. After a while, the grapes confer among themselves, begin to whisper marvelous, bubbling secrets together, which they may divulge in a few weeks. In look and outside of the colored cosmos, and philosophic, tilting pinball planets seen scarfless. Jesus, some of the Winemaker's Song. After a while, the grapes confer among themselves, begin to whisper marvelous, bubbling secrets together, which they may divulge in a few weeks. In look and outside of the colored cosmos, and philosophic, tilting pinball planets seen scarcely often only upside down, and they'll fool you, sometimes sideways endwise, sweetly by the gentle gutter connoisseurs. They may divulge excitedly with tenor and soprano whispers why the bottlenecking wisdom sounds so harsh and hoarsely incontinent men's ears, incoherent to such and such and sober so-and-so's and cry, we are the dead drunk short hours ago. We truly serious and sober look you straight in your damned eyes while asking terribly, how are you, like any other stranger. Begin to whisper in look and outside of the colored cosmos, and how illusions seem to end while walking tall beneath the kitchen table, and all our real and unreal selves decide themselves which one is human, and stumble out in search of what they are, and stagger out among the uniforms to issue proclamations to the world, and drunken manifestos made of poem dust and eon mist that say the way things ought to be, and how the drab gray rules and regs of kings and pricks and man's morality stop short, wait, behind a mouthful of wet commas, till, until you say, or I do anyway, no need of further questions to yourself, to one woman, woman now, this part of me is part of me, my dear, and certainly, most certainly, this at least is what I am. Many of these poems I never read at all, you know, because they're just not made for reading, some of them. Oh, boy. I think it was Wednesday. This is fairly complicated. I've forgotten what it means myself. 2 miles of dusty road to the village. Me on it. A fairly young man walking and counting zigs of zagging snake fences. Loyalist farmers measured long ago. Chased by points and limits and dimensions. How many miles to Alexandria from dusty Ameliasburg? How far would Euclid make it? Counting the zigs and zags and odds and evens, in and out like numeral music. You could grow old walking to the village, or sailing to Alexandria over the yellow wheat to buy hamburger and dates in the bazaar. at Alexandria or Ameliasburg, jostled by Euclid and Ptolemy, come sweating into the sunlight from classroom and palace. Old lover boy Euclid wooing the last unbroken virgin, the highest numerical prime. Did he find her before the muse ensounded? That spindly love-starved creature with round O's for thighs, searching for her deviser in the bloodless, passionless skies. Or come counting with me the loyalist fences, and drag Ptolemy around on the road to a dusty village, far, far from anywhere they knew. Stand without surprise, labeling the zigs and zags, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, 17, how high? Here we are, Euclid and Ptolemy and I, walking the dusty road to a village, pinned down like bugs in the definite here and now, and numbers, prime numbers, go rocketing outbound over and under my head and feet. And Ptolemy's tinsel crown looks a bit battered, as if he'd slept in it. Euclid's beard hasn't been combed. Euc, old boy, I say, here's a good touch for you. I'm going to make each prime number to the power of P, and of course that's me, like this. 3P, 5P, 7P, 11P, 13P, 17P, like that. We're here, I told him, and he caught on fast. We're here, but the prime numbers keep on going somewhere, each to the power of me, if you'll forgive the vanity, Euc. We're finite, but numbers aren't. Get it, boy? Suddenly there was snow in the zags of the snake fences. In the zigs it was still summer, and we were getting a little old. As the numbers slipped over the canning factory hill, in the zigs among rotting potato tomato peelings, you know. Suddenly there was snow in the zags of the snake fences. In the zigs it was still summer, and we were getting a little old. As the numbers slipped over the canning factory hill, in the zigs among rotting tomato peelings, in the zags by the airport, an old-fashioned jet plane warmed up in the snow. And the numbers, prime numbers, reeled away in the sky, where it never once was Wednesday's. Into a silence untouched by names of things. The numbers, prime numbers, got tangled up in Aquarius. Star rivers of Eridanus broke free of the canning factory to Perseus and Ursus Major. And we were left there, just Ptolemy and Euclid and I, standing on the road. Pretty soon there was only myself, walking to Ameliasburg, an old man pinned down in the definite, held like a bug in the finite, chased by points and limits and dimensions, walking the long road to a village, and overhead the stars beginning to... Late rising at Roblin Lake. This, I should mention that... And when I first went to Roblin Lake, I determined that I was going to write. I did write, of course, all hours of the day and night. And I started waking up at all hours, too. I would sleep at all hours and wake up at all hours. In other words, this poem is about all the differences of waking up at all the different times of the day and night. Late rising at Roblin Lake. All hours the day begins. One may awake at dawn with bird cries streaking light to sound to song to colored silence. Wake with sunstream shuttle threading through curtain shadows, dazzling eyes at 4 p.m. and 9 p.m. and 1 a.m. One may awake inside a moving house, earthbound by heart tick and clock beat only, all one August afternoon. Once, why, stumbling, yawning, nude to front window there on the dock in noon fog lit, with his own slow self-strangeness, stood a tall blue heron, and the day began with him. Cronus at the Squinty Hotel. In the tavern, I asked the 92-year-old man what it was like to be what he was, and tentatively is. How does it feel to have your body become a bag of old flesh, carried round by bones? Ask if any sex was left when a girl jiggled past. He got mad, made to blast me like Zeus, only with fists. I cowered from his lightning, realizing without thought that nobody but... Jesus Christ, I get... Hate to... Anyway, Cronus at the Quinty Hotel. In the tavern, I asked the 92-year-old man what it was like to be what he was, and tentatively is. How does it feel to have your body become a bag of old flesh, carried round by bones? Ask if any sex was left when a girl jiggled past. He got mad and made to blast me like Zeus, only with fists. I cowered from his lightning, realizing without thought that nobody but Bernard Shaw could hit a 92-year-old man. But he changed his mind. The imperial old fist fell harmless, and for a moment I knew what it was like to be old, so old even Bernard Shaw's beard is boy fuzz. I knew what it was like when the old man left, leaving a nickel tip for the waiter. He left strutting and as young as a newborn fossil, and he walked straight. I remember a short month later going downtown, and a warm sun on my neck shone in the middle of a long afternoon, looking at a young girl's legs, and I chuckled, as softly as a fossil might, if a fossil could, by God, chuckle, watching how I walk from shop window to shop window, and I walk straight. John, John has a dance hall, by the way, around north of Belleville. John, we go out to visit John. He owns a big dance hall with a lighted waterfall and a ship at one end for the paying customers to pretend with. And he has a bathtub in his basement full of 12-inch goldfish some workmen found in a quarry, which he intends to blend and make part of the decor. He talks of the ancient Greek philosophers. His kick is Hellenic right now. The soaring architecture and literature, the oral sexual routine of hetera, are all his own personal discoveries. John says Canada is nothing compared to Greece, and everyone talks at once, arguing the point, and nobody ever finishes a sentence. I can understand why he thinks how he thinks, comparing his own artificial waterfall and the ruins of Periclean Athens, comparing Sophocles' Oedipus cycle to this then unwritten poem of mine, about a dance hall owner talking about Socrates drinking bitter hemlock while I watch the saliva glitter after he licks his lips. My grandfather talking 30 years ago. Not now, boy, not now. Some other time I'll tell you what it was like, the way it was, without no streets or names of places round, and nothing but moonlight, boy, nothing but that. Why ain't there woods no more? I was used to woods, and how far I was anywhere was as far as the woods went, except and up, and I never went. They put a road there, and a girl in the road in a blue dress, and given a place to go from, I went into the woods with her, it being the best way to go and never get there. Walk in the woods and not get lost, wherever the woods go. A house in the way, a wall in the way, a stone in the way that got there quick as hell. And a man shouting, stop, but you don't dare stop, or everything would fall down. You know it's time, boy, when you can't tell anyone, and there ain't none to tell, about whatever it was I was saying, what I was thinking about, what I was talking of. Poem called Transient. In the 30s, in the late 30s, as a kid of 16 and 17, I rode the freight trains, and this is more or less about the general experience of riding freight trains, transient, which all bums were called. Riding the boxcars out of Winnipeg in a morning after rain, so close to the violent sway of fields, it's like running and running, naked with summer in your mouth. The guy behind you grunts and says, got a smoke? Being a boy, scarcely a moment, and you hear the rumbling iron roadbed singing under the wheels at night. The door jerking open, mile after dusty mile, riding into Regina with the dust storm crowding behind you. The guy you hardly even spoke to nudges your shoulder chummily and says, got a smoke? Riding into the Crow's Nest Mountains with your first beard itching and 100 hungry guys fanning out through the shabby whistle stops for handouts. Not even a sandwich for 200 miles. Only the high mountains and knowing what it's like to be not quite a child anymore. And listening to the tough men talk of women, talk of the way things are in 1937. riding down in the spit-gray sea-level morning through dockyard streets and dingy dowager houses, with ocean a jump away and the sky beneath you, and puddles and Water Street. An old Indian woman pushing her yawning, scratching daughter onto a balcony to yell at the boy man passing, "Want some fun? Come on up." And the girl just come from riding the shrieking bedspring bronco all the up and down night to a hitch post morning, full of mothers and dirt and lice, and hardly the place for a princess of the Coast Salish. My dove, my little one, tonight there will be wine in the loins of a dozen men to pin you down in the outlying lands of sleep, innocent as a child, awaiting the last of all your bridegrooms. Stand in the swaying boxcar doorway, moving east, away from the sunset. And after a while the eyes digest a country, and the belly perceives a mapmaker's vision, and dust and dirt on the face and hands here, its smell drawn deep through the nostrils, down to the lungs, and spurts through bloodstream, campaigns in the lower intestine, and chants love songs to the kidneys. After a while, there is no arrival and no departure possible anymore. You are where you are always going. The shape of home has planted itself in your loins. The identity of forests that were always nameless. The selfhood of rivers that are changing always. The nationality of riding a boxcar through the depression over long green plains and high mountain country with the best and worst of a love that's not to be spoken. The guy right behind you.